Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts here, Dana Azban, here with my friend Chavruta Aaron Gordon. Our daf today, Masachah Bava Kamma, daf mem, page 40. Well, we're finally getting to a topic that I've been wanting to know a lot more about, which is the concept of kofar, this payment of kofar. So kofar is a payment that's done if you have a muad ox that kills a person, the ox is put to death, and then the owner has to pay kofar. And it comes from the word kapara, right, which means atonement. And the idea is that the kofar payment is an atonement for this ox having killed somebody. And it shows sort of that the damager, right, the person who owns that ox, is responsible for that death and has to atone for the fact that a person was killed, and therefore he needs to make this additional payment. So the Gemara here has a brisa which says, Tanu Rabbanan, right, apitrosim mishalmim min ha'elya, ve'ein mishalmim kofar. So when we talk about these agents, right, remember our Mishnah talked about that sometimes the court especially would have to appoint an apitropos, you know, to sort of sort out some of these cases, especially if there's a katan involved, right, a minor who's involved, but also possibly if there's a cheresh or a shota involved. So when they need to make sure that some type of damage is paid for, they do it from the elya, right, which is like the best property if the animal inflicts damage. The aim is shalmim kofar, but they do not have to pay kofar. So in other words, what this would mean is that an agent, an apitropos who's in charge of, let's say, a katan orphan, would be responsible to pay by the damage done by the ox that's owned by the minor, but is obviously he's in charge of, but he would not have to pay kofar, which is very interesting. And the reason for this assumption, the Mefarshim explain, the commentators explain, is because minors don't need atonement, right? Like they wouldn't, they're not sort of responsible yet, or, you know, we don't hold them to be liable in a certain way. And so the Gemara then wants to know, okay, which Tana teaches this? Man Tana Kufra Kafra, right? Who holds that the kofar payment is an atonement? V'yitame labine kapra ninu. And orphans, right, minor orphans don't need atonement, and therefore they wouldn't have to pay kofar. Amar Rav Chista. Rav Chista says, Rabbi Yishmael benosha Rabbi Yochanan ben Borka ki. It's Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Borka, Titania. And so now they quote a brisa. And here what they're talking about is that there's a pasuk in Shmot, chapter 21, verse 30. And this is where we get the idea of the kofar payment, which says, Im kofar yoshat alav, v'natan pidyon nafsho kechol asher yushat alav. Right? When a kofar shall be imposed upon him, he shall give a ransom for his life, whatever shall be imposed upon him. And it's from this pasuk that they get the concept of the kofar payment. V'natan pidyon nafsho. So he, the owner of the ox that killed, shall give a ransom for his life, meaning, and that's the kofar payment. Dame nizak. So this refers to the monetary value of the damaged party. So the ransom, this pigeon, would equal the value of the victim before his death, basically. Now the question is, how would you decide what the value actually is? So some people say it's how much they would be worth if you sold them as a slave. That's a whole other interesting thing. But it would obviously vary from person. It's not going to be the same thing for each person. But that's how you would basically, but it's the value of the damaged party. Rabbi Yishmael benosha Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Amer, Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, says, Demei Mazik, it's the value of the damager, of the owner of the ox. So that's a very interesting, right, that the ransom equals the value of the owner's ox. My lav bein nayu kamaflige. So what is it that they are disagreeing about? De Rabbanan Savri Kufra Mamonahi. The rabbis, meaning the Tanakhama here, is basically saying that kofar is a compensatory payment. In other words, it's like damages, so it's based on the value of the damaged party. For Rabbi Yishmael ben Osha, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, savar kufra kafra. But Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, holds that the kofar is actually an atonement. So the rabbis hold that it's just part of the damage payment, this kofar payment, even though it has the root of the word atonement in it, but it's an additional damage payment. Whereas Rabbi Yishmael holds that it is an atonement. It's an atonement basically. And because it's an atonement, for the owner, it's based on the value of the owner. So he's the one who holds that it's an atonement. Now, the Gemara is actually going to give have difficulty with this, with our understanding of the machlokas. Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, lo, that's not what the machlokas is over. To kuli ama kufra kafrahu. Everyone agrees that kofar is an atonement. V'hacha b'hai kama plige. What is it that they're really disagreeing about in this brisa? Rabbanan sari b'dinizak shma'inan. The rabbis hold that we assess the amount of atonement according to the value of the damaged property. So in other words, the damager, how does he get atonement? He gives an amount of money that is the value of the person who was killed. For Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka sever de bimazik shmaninan. Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, holds that we make it according to the value of the damager. So in other words, everybody holds that it is a kofar is an atonement, right? That's not what it's. But the question is the value of the kofar, where do you get it? And so the Gemara goes on, my time is a Rabbanan. What's the reason of the rabbis? Ne'emra shita lamata, right? So this would mean like imposition is stated below. In other words, when it talks about what the kofar obligations are, the Nemra Shita Lamala, and the imposition is stated above. In other words, there's a pasuk that talks about the payment that somebody has to give if you cause a pregnant woman to miscarry. So this word imposition that they're talking about is this word that's in the pasuk of Yushat, right? Ki im kofer Yushat Alav. This was the pasuk I read before from Shmot chapter 21, verse 30, that the kofer shall be imposed on him. And then, right, it says Anoshi Anesh Kashir Yashida Lev Baal Haisha. Earlier in that same parak, in verse 22, Shmot chapter 21, verse 22, where it talks about the case where you cause a woman to have a miscarriage, right? So he, the man who did this, he'll be punished according to what the husband of the woman shall impose upon him. So they basically make a gezerah shava here that this word yushat, right, which later is yashit, but this concept of imposition, right, is based on justice in the case ma lehalan bidinizak. In the case of miscarriage, right, the assessment is based on the value of the damaged property, afkan bidinizak. So too here in our case, it would be in the value of the damaged property. Why doesn't Rabbi Yishmael hold like this? For Rabbi Yishmael, Benosha Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Savar, V'natam pijon nafsho, right? The Pasuk says, in the Pasuk we quoted about this case with the ox, in Shmot chapter 21, verse 30, right? He shall give a ransom for his life. So who's the his is the damager. It's the owner of the ox. So this would mean that the payment should be based on his value. Now, what would the rabbi say about that? For Rabbanan, they would say, in true, pijon asho ketiv, that when it says ransom for his life, it is a ransom for his atonement. Mihu kishma'inan bidinizak shma'inan. However, we assess his atonement according to the value of the damaged property. So the his there, yes, it refers to the owner, it refers to the owner of the ox, the damager, but it means it's his atonement, but it doesn't mean that it's based on his value. And that's how the rabbis would solve it. So I wanted to share this because I think this whole concept of the kofar payment is one that's very interesting. I think it shows an understanding of the severity. If you are negligent and do something that causes somebody's death, it's taken so seriously that even though you directly may not have done it, right? It was your animal that you somehow didn't watch well enough. You have to do some atonement. Like you have to live with the rest of your life that you did this, and therefore you need to pay this atonement to make up for it. So I've been waiting. We've been talking about kofar a bit, but this is the first time the daf really gets into some nice detail about it.
The other thing, or maybe this is really also part of what you're getting at, Yordana, that I think about kofar is that it gives us, you know, a whole value system, or a discussion about a whole value system that underlies this question of what happens when you have property that damages a person, and you know, and what are you supposed to do about that, right? Like the damages that you pay don't quite ever seem to be enough if a person were to be killed. So this kofar, which I understand the machloket, but I feel like it gives us a whole, you know, a way to talk about it that takes us beyond the fact that, you know, oh, property did some damage, and into this realm of atonement, which I think is helpful and valuable. I want to jump to Amud Bet and come back to the stadium ox, which has kind of captured my interest. Shure ayet stadion eino chayav mita. So the issue here is that we've got a stadium ox, meaning, you know, at a bullfight, right, or the moral equivalent, and it is put into the ring to kill the person who is supposed to, you know, for sport, Rachman al-Etzlan, it's supposed to, you know, fight each other to the death. And if the ox wins, so the halacha is very clear that this is not considered a goring ox in terms of all of the halachot that pertain to a goring ox. So the Gemara here gets very practical about it. Like, how far do we take that? Meaning, the question here is asked, what if you have a stadium ox, meaning there's a bullfight, and the ox kills a person? Can that ox then be brought as a korban or not? Meaning, okay, it's one thing to say that the stadium ox is not put to death because it's been set up to be in this role as killing the person that, you know, comes to fight it or whatever in the stadium, but could it actually be sacrificed on the altar, which would suggest that there's no guilt by association. There's no risk of the act of killing left on this ox. Rav amar kasher, Ushmul amar pasul. Not surprisingly, we have a dispute, machloket here, right? Where Rav says, yes, this stadium ox can be brought as an offering, and Shmuel says it's disqualified. You can't bring a stadium ox that killed another person, that killed a person, to be offered on the mizbeach, on the altar. Rav amar kasher, anusu. Rav says that the ox could go on the mizbeach, can be offered as a sacrifice, because its circumstances are completely beyond its control, right? It's like forced to do this. Ushmul amar pasul hare navan bo avera. And Shmuel says it's not qualified to be a korban, an offering on the mizbeach, on the altar, because even if it's not the ox's fault, it was still, you know, in a guilty kind of way, or in a driven to gore kind of way by its own, I don't know, its own state of being, there's still an avera, there's still a transgression, a sin happening with this ox, and therefore, like, how could you offer that kind of animal on the altar, even if you're not going to hold it accountable, but to bring it in purity, it's too much for Shmuel. Meitve, so the Gemara brings an objection from a breita that has a verse that's going to, you know, try to counter this. Min ha-behema, right? So we're talking, it's a verse in Vayikra where it says, from the cattle, even from the herd or from the flock. And the phrase there, min ha-behema, from the cattle, lo hatzi et ha-ruvea ve-et ha-nirba. And that's going to exclude, once you're talking about cattle, we're going to say that's going to leave out, excuse me, an animal that was used for bestiality, you know, as it excludes it from being able to be offered on the mizbech as a sacrifice. Min habakar, and then likewise it says you bring from the herd, right? And that is going to exclude any animal that was then et ne'avad, that was worshipped as a god, or in the as if that animal is in the sanctum of gods, right? Like we know that some of our prime animals that are for offerings, including cows and sheep, right? These are all worshipped as gods by other cultures. Min hatzon, from the flocks, right? The flocks is going to exclude, that's an animal that has been set aside, lo tzieta muktze, that which has been set aside to for idolatrous purpose. Min hatzon, and likewise, you know, or from the flock, lo tzieta nogeach, and that's going to exclude an animal, and here is what we want here, right? That is nogeach, that gores a person and kills him. Now, it's an interesting case, right, that says from the flocks, where flocks are very often understood to mean like small cattle, right? Goats and sheep, as opposed to an ox. But regardless, this is learned from this verse, where each section of the verse is, you know, taught that, like, what is things, as we've just said. The Breita continues, from the moment that you say that you're excluding an animal that engaged in bestiality, you're excluding it from being able to be an offering, then why do you have to even say that an animal that gores is disqualified? And likewise, if you say that an animal that gores is disqualified, why would you say that an animal was used for bestiality is also excluded? Meaning either one of these should be enough to teach the other. Once you're going for the sin in that way, you know, it's going to include other sins in that way as well. So he explains, there are ways you could say, well, it would only be this one and not the other one in both directions because they're not really identical. And that, I think, is pretty clear. So he's going to explain this, and with that we'll close. Rovea asabo ones karatzon. With an animal that's involved, or being used, really, for bestiality, the implication is that you have an animal that is, I mean, it's difficult to talk about and difficult to think about. We've got circumstances where the animal is treated, you know, fundamentally against its will, but it also ends up acting willfully. Nogeach lo asa ba'ones kiratzon. But when you're talking about the goring ox, there's, you know, on the one hand, you've got circumstances that are beyond the animal's control, you know, but to say that it's acting willfully is even more difficult here. Nogeach mishalim kofer, rovea eno mishalim et kofer. And so here again, the kofer that you're dealing with, that you just discussed, is relevant and required for an animal that kills, for an ox that gores, but not for the animal that is involved in bestiality. It should be clear, I think, right? There's no animal that's engaging a human being in bestiality without the human being engaging the animal in bestiality, right? Like, the, you know, that's part of the difference here as well. The goring ox that, in both cases, I guess, really, the person is roping the animal into the sin, as opposed to an animal just going ahead on its own. So therefore, the Torah is going to include the statement that excludes the animal that is used for bestiality, as well as the animal that gores. But of course, the question then here is going to bring us back to what about our stadium ox, right? Because the stadium ox is, in fact, you know, beyond, the circumstances are entirely beyond its control, as opposed to a regular goring ox that stampedes on its own. That doesn't necessarily mean it's desiring to kill, right? But it's not the same thing as a stadium ox that is really set to do so by its handlers. And so then that's the question here, right? The stadium ox is considered a victim of circumstances, and that's why, you know, in contrast to what Shmuel says, that it's used for sin. So this discussion, right, that is really comparing a goring ox that's not a stadium ox to the animal that's used for bestiality. The whole discussion is back to the question of the stadium ox, and can it be used for the altar? And the answer is, well, because it is more, you know, more used against its own will, so to speak. However it comes up, we're going to talk about the will of the animal, which we've already discussed at length. The stadium ox, really, you know, the Gemara says it's really not at fault. And it ends up concluding, at least to the extent that we get to that point in this section of the sugya, to agree with Rav, like to disagree with Shmuel, to say, yes, it was used for sin, but we're not worrying about that when it's completely a victim of circumstances beyond its control. It's not acting willfully, right? It's not, like, why wouldn't it be eligible? Nothing has gone wrong with it. Now, we can take that, you know, and go to the bank with it in terms of the ethos of what does it mean when somebody is pressed into a sin against their own will, right? I don't really want to go that far at this point, but I'm just leaving it there for the sake of, you know, for the sake of discussion. And of course, the Gemara, I didn't get to the very end of the daf. It will continue, and it continues on until tomorrow as well.
That's our daf discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this daf on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.